Welcome to Reflections and Wonders, Revisiting Luke's Gospel, a podcast that's just me wondering off the top of my head about Luke's Gospel for the second time in 3 years. My name is Norm Seeley, and I'm a minister at Jubilee United Church in Toronto, Canada. I've been a minister for over 30 years, and every year my thoughts and wonderings change. So, Monday to Friday, I'll be reading my way through Luke, even though I read through Luke in 2021. But the thing is, the world's changed. I've changed, and so I expect that my wonderings will have changed as well. I don't have notes, and I haven't checked back to see what I said 3 years ago, but I am kind of looking forward to hearing what I say now. Or more importantly, what I think God may be saying to me now. I do want to thank Drew Winters for the music and you for joining me. I will do my best to keep my wanderings between 18 and 30 minutes, but every once in a while we may go a couple minutes long. You should also know that this is an audio version of a video blog that I will have recorded 2 weeks ago. So, if you want to see what I look like when I'm wandering, well, you can find me on my YouTube channel. Just search Norm Seeley. That's Norm Seeley, S-E-L-I. Or even easier, find me on the Jubilee United Church website, www.jubileeunited.ca. And if you want to support this and other digital ministries of Jubilee United Church, well, you can make a donation through canadahelps.org. We are Jubilee United Church, the one in Ontario. So now, let's see what Luke has to say this time around. Well, today we're in Luke chapter 11, verses 37 to 54. We are doing a big chunk there, but we'll finish the chapter. And I think that all of this belongs together. You'll see why. Yesterday we heard about looking for signs and why we should look for signs and maybe we shouldn't. And we heard about eyes that can see and not. And then we heard about light. And it was definitely something you needed to wonder about. But with the wondering, I think came some clarity and some light, at least it did for me. Today we're moving on from there, and you'll see what happens. It's Luke 11, 37 to 54. While Jesus was speaking, a Pharisee invited him to dine with him. So he went in and took his place at the table. The Pharisee was amazed to see that he did not first wash before dinner. Then the Lord said to him, "Now you Pharisee clean the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside you're full of greed and wickedness. You fools, did not the one who made the outside make the inside also? So give alms for those things that are within, and see, everything will be clean for you. But woe to you, Pharisees, for you tithe mint and rue and herbs of all kinds, and neglect justice and the love of God. It is these you ought to have practiced without neglecting the others. Woe to you, Pharisees, for you love to have the seat of honor in the synagogues and to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces. Woe to you, for you are like unmarked graves and people walk over them without realizing it." One of the lawyers answered him, "Teacher, when you say these things, you insult us too." And he said, "Woe also to you, lawyers, for you load people with burdens hard to bear, and you yourselves do not lift a finger to ease them. Woe to you, for you build the tombs of the prophets whom your ancestors killed. So you are witnesses and approve of the deeds of your ancestors, for they killed them, and you build their tombs. Therefore also the wisdom of God said, 'I will send them prophets and apostles, some of whom they will kill and persecute, so that this generation may be charged with the blood of all the prophets shed since the foundation of the world, from the blood of Abel to the blood of Zechariah, who perished between the altar and the sanctuary. Yes, I tell you, it will be charged against this generation. Woe to you, lawyers, for you have taken away the key of knowledge. You did not enter yourselves, and you hindered those who were entering.' When he went outside, the scribes and the Pharisees began to be very hostile toward him and to cross-examine him about many things, lying in wait for him to catch him in something he might say." Yeah. Wow, what a shock. The scribes and the Pharisees were hostile towards him after this. Yeah. For clarity, lawyers, scribes, same thing. So you'll hear a scribe referenced here or a lawyer. One of the lawyers answered him. The scribes were upset. Same thing. The scribes are experts in Mosaic law. So they are there with the Pharisees. They are leaders in the temple. And Jesus, well, it's hard to know exactly. I mean, in all fairness, I think I know what I think. I think I know what went on. I'm not sure if Luke sees it the same way or tells it the way I would tell it, but I saw a meme not long ago that actually made me laugh, but it made a very good point. It said something to the effect that, you know, 100 years from now, historians will not know the difference between a butt dial and a booty call. I think you probably get the whole... But essentially, butt and dial, butt and booty, dial and call, same things, but a butt dial is not the same as a booty call. It's really... So... It's hard to stand on solid ground to say, oh, here's what's happened. For instance, it says here right at the very beginning, Pharisee invites Jesus to dine with him. So he goes in, takes his place at the table, and the Pharisee's amazed to see that he did not wash before dinner. Now, most people will tell you what we're talking about here is the ritual washing. Of course, Jesus washed his hands before dinner. You just would. It's basic politeness. It's hygiene. There's no stories of Jesus being unhygienic. So he went in. He was a good guest, but he didn't follow all of the rituals. The implication is that the Pharisees would have elaborate, intricate rituals for hand washing, and indeed they did. You wash before the meal, you wash during the meal, between courses, all sorts of ways you did it. And your hands were this way, and your hands were that way. There's a whole way of doing it. So the suggestion here is in this line that Jesus didn't do that. That's very possible. And I think that's very likely. It's also possible, however, that Jesus didn't wash before dinner. That Jesus walked in, sat down, was essentially a bad guest. You may remember a little while ago, I wondered about Jesus being a bad guest in the home of Mary and Martha. But anyway, he went in, he didn't wash his hands because he wanted to provoke the Pharisee. He wanted to make the very statement that we have, you know, about how now you Pharisees clean the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside you're full of greed and wickedness. He wanted to tell them that this doesn't matter. And so he's done this to provoke them. That's also possible. Which would it be? I mean, is Jesus going in, accepting this invitation and going into the home of the Pharisee to pick a fight? Or is he gone in expecting to have a lovely meal, but the Pharisee's criticism has set him off? Because he has been set off. I mean, if you want to say, no, he went in gently and the Pharisee provoked him. But boy, oh boy, Jesus is flying with a woe to you, woe to you, woe to you. That's extreme talk. I suspect it's equivalent of me saying, damn your eyes, man. Like, you know, for me to all but curse you, to damn you. I might be wrong. Butt call and booty dial. But Jesus' language, as it's told here, seems to be extreme. It seems that he's been waiting to get these things off his chest. Because not only does it to the Pharisees, he also does it to the lawyers. Now, did he intend to have a nice time, and the Pharisee and the lawyers brought it on themselves, and he just couldn't keep it back anymore, or did he go in looking for a fight? Did he go in spoiling? Did he go in ready to kick over some tables? I don't know. And I don't know if it changes the meaning a lot, but I find sometimes the way we picture things happening does change them. I mean, if I say to you, woe to you for parking in my parking spot, because you know what? I'm going to have to get someone to come tow you. Or, woe to you for parking in my parking spot, your car's already gone. Is there a difference? It tells you a little bit about me, sure. But do the words change? Well, one is damnation, one is a little more patience. I mean, maybe Jesus went in and he's relaxed about the whole thing and taken a little aback that somebody would be so rude as to criticize the fact that he's not washing properly, right? Well, we assume he's washing, but he's not washing properly. And so then he says, well, you Pharisees clean the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside you're full of greed and wickedness. Boy, did that escalate quickly. You're not washing properly. You're full of greed and wickedness. Greed. Wow. That's really pushing it. I don't know where greed's been revealed in any of this. Wickedness is subjective, but where's the greed in this? I mean, we may get to that in the part where you like to have, you know, the seat of respect, the seat of honor and everything, but I don't know. It just escalates so quickly that I'm inclined to think Jesus went in there to cause a fight. And maybe Jesus didn't even wash his hands. Maybe Jesus walked right in, sat down at the table, and waited to get it going. Let's go. Let's do it. You Pharisees, you're so good at inviting people to dinner, but you don't really offer them hospitality. You're so good at cleaning the cups and the along the outside so they shine and they look beautiful, but inside they're dirty, they're filthy. You are full of greed and wickedness. Do you actually think that God can't see your inside? Right? I think to me that's what Jesus is saying there. You know, the one who made the outside made the inside too. So God knows what you look like inside. So you may look pious and proper and kind and generous and all those things, but inside God knows. God knows you're greedy. And you're wicked. So give alms for those things that are within. Giving alms is an act of charity, but it's an act of attention. You were meant to give alms to those who needed it. Give alms for that stuff within, because you need it inside, buddy. If you get things sorted out inside, if you can be kind inside, then what's on the outside doesn't even matter anymore, because God will see that. And he goes on to you know, woe to you Pharisees even more. I mean, I love the, you tithe mint and rue and herbs of all kinds and neglect justice and the love of God. You care about the tiniest little things, but you don't care about the important things, justice and the love of God. And that's when I hear those words and go, okay, you're getting a little close to me here. Because I do hear these words. I hear the words, you know, when he said, woe to you Pharisees, you love to have the seat of honor in your synagogues and be greeted with respect in marketplaces. I try not to make it an issue, but I do want people to respect me. You know, and when they don't, it bothers me a little more than it should. Absolutely it does. I've got a little bit of there. I've got a little pride in there. But you tithe mint and rue and herbs of all kinds and neglect justice and love of God. I think, you know, about those things that are important and how we might tend to the important things, but how we might get distracted with things that aren't nearly as important. So, you know, for instance, I'm one of those people. I, you know, we still in my church put hymn numbers up on little boards at the front of the church. Got these old original boards. Great. We slide the little numbers in, right? And so we'll slide in 693, 126, and we slide the hymn numbers in so you can look there, even though it's in your bulletin in your hand. But we'll slide those in and make the. And I like to make sure they are all centered. It really bugs me when they're not centered. And I will make sure, okay, they're all centered good. The other side's wrong. Now I'll go to this side of the room and I'll get those centered. They're not in the same order. Now, okay, I'll make sure that they are set just right. And I'll walk out of the sanctuary going, there, good for me. Got that little thing fixed. Church is in 15 minutes and I'm ready for it. And yet I have not removed some of the seats. And I say that because this happened recently where I did remember it. But it's funny, I got the hymns lined up before I remembered. So I have a sanctuary in my church where we have chairs. They are interlocking chairs. We don't have pews. We have chairs. And after we'd had an event, someone had put everything back together again. God bless them. Thank you. It was wonderful. It was all done. And we're all back in rows, and it's fantastic. And I noticed, yep, all the rows, and the rows look great, and they're just spaced fine. Great. But we had not removed some of them because we have people who come to church in a wheelchair or with walkers or a variety of things. And even if we didn't have people coming to church yet, we might have them come eventually. And if you don't make room for people, then they can never feel welcomed. Because, it's no problem. We'll take the chairs out when they come. Right. And now you've made them an imposition. And so they don't feel connected. They don't feel that they belong. They feel less than the people who don't have to ask for any special effort. Make sure you get those hymn numbers right. Absolutely. But think about accessibility and connection for people. So this hits home. I don't think that I worry too much about hymn numbers on a board or even chairs in or out. I don't think I worry about that to the cost of justice and sharing the love of God. But I think any of us can get wrapped up in the little things and forget about the big things. We will deem our effort a failure and quit trying because we made a little mistake, a procedural mistake, forgetting for a moment that what we're really trying to do is to share the love of God. We will see somebody on the street who's looking for some financial help, and we'll look at them for a little bit and try to judge whether they really need it or really not. Or are they just taking advantage of passersby? Are they faking it really? And we'll spend a fair bit of time on that. In fact, more time than it probably took to earn the toonie you were going to give them. Or the 5 or the 10. I get so wrapped up in the thing, I forget about justice and the love of God. And indeed, this person does need help. Now, I can also just, carry around hands full of toonies or rolls of 5s and give everybody that kind of money, but I'm not actually letting it affect how I vote. I am not helping out at my local food bank. I am not trying to advocate for better resources for this person, alternatives. I'm not doing that. I'm not befriending that person, by the way. I'm giving them money and walking past them as fast as I can. Where is the justice in that? This is a challenge. Really good at the outside. What's going on the inside? Why did you not stop and talk to that person? Well, because I don't have time and I have to be here. And I go, okay, that's good. Why did I stop to talk to that person? Well, because they're icky. Okay. It's good to know what goes on inside, because as you get inside sorted out, well, then you're sorted. Like that's what I'm hearing, and that's how I'm taking this. And I do love, I take this one very seriously, but I just love it. I don't know if Jesus said these words or Luke has come up with these words, but woe to you, he says to the Pharisees, for you are like unmarked graves and people walk over them without realizing it. Oh, man, that's a beauty. That's saying one of two things, or maybe both things at the same time. One, I think it's saying you're dead and you don't even know it. I really do think that's what that's saying. But, I mean, if you're aware of some of the customs observant Jews at that time, and for so many today, walking over a grave defiles you, basically. You can't now go in, you don't walk across a grave, and then go into the synagogue to pray. You don't do that. You don't go to shul after walking over a grave. You don't do that. You are defiled. I don't know how long that lasts for. I think it's probably a day. But that's just the way that is, right? So, one, I think he's saying to the Pharisees, you guys are dead and you don't even know it. But he's also very definitely saying, you are unmarked graves. People walk over you. They're defiling themselves. They don't even know it. You are leading people away from God. They think they're getting closer to God, but you are leading them away from God with all of your rituals and demands and all of that. And I honestly think that Jesus was looking for a chance to say that. I think he was thrilled to be invited, took that invitation, and made sure to provoke the Pharisee. Because I don't think that Jesus just ramped up that fast. I think Jesus went in with an agenda and needed to say some things. Or maybe Luke has an agenda and needs to say some things and so gives us the story of Jesus that may or may not have happened but is entirely consistent with Jesus. Some of these points, which is just, it's not about the outside, it is about the inside. God sees inside, God recognizes what goes on inside. But I do take also very seriously, you're like unmarked graves, people walk over them without realizing it. The idea of leading people away from their faith, making it hard for them. I have critics who would say that what I do here is leading people away from the true faith or from reading the Bible properly, because I do all this wondering. You don't wonder, we know what it means, and here it is. I understand what they're saying. Obviously, I disagree with them. But I don't think it's so much leading them astray as it is getting in their way. Maybe I am getting in your way of growing in faith. Maybe I'm inviting you to tithe the mint and the rue and the herbs of all kinds. You know, focus on the trivial instead of seeing the bigger picture. Maybe. But I take that very seriously and think about that, the things that I do and how I do them as a minister, but also as a person of faith. Am I leading people towards a better relation with God, or am I getting in their way? So, like, am I imposing myself? So you need to have a relationship with me before you have a relationship with God. Am I doing that? Because I have known a number of religious leaders who do exactly that. Get that sense, the only way you're ever going to know God is with my help or through me. And that's led to all manner of abuses. Some criminal, frankly. Well, definitely criminal. But others too, egregious, even though they may not be criminal. And yeah, I take that very seriously, but also just as a person of faith. If people know me as a person of faith, and yet they see me act in a certain way or do certain things, that is communicating something to them. Am I leading them towards their faith, helping them grow, or am I pulling them away? Well, if Norm does that, that must be the right thing to do. Oh, I'm not inviting any people, any persons of faith to take the weight of the world on their shoulders. But be aware, you know, but to think, I want us all to be aware that what we do matters. Of course, then one of the lawyers, or scribes, says, you know, when you go after them, you're insulting us too. And Jesus goes, yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I mean to. Your intricate knowledge of the law, what this means and that means, and how this is to be interpreted. It's just like, you do so much of that that people disconnect. They're not connecting to God anymore. They're too busy trying to figure out. There's 613 different commandments I've got to understand. Well, how about just love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself? What if you did that? You lawyers, you load people with burdens hard to bear. That is, you have all of these rules. And you yourselves, you don't lift a finger to ease them. I have heard that criticism directed at lawyers. Lawyers that I know, my friends who are lawyers, lawyers in the world just saying, oh, the legal system is so complicated, nobody can understand it, and you can't afford to get a lawyer, but you can't defend yourself because you can't understand the legal code. It's all way too complicated. It's got so much Latin in it, I don't get any of it. What are we supposed to do? The legal system, some would say, has become a burden on the people it was meant to serve, and it does nothing to lift that burden. Unless, of course, you have the money. Yeah, I think about the things that I try to do. Am I making life easier for people, or am I making it harder on people? And then he gets into a really neat piece, because, you know, he's talking to lawyers, scribes, who are experts in the law, which means also, therefore, the Torah, the history and the rules of the Jewish people. You build tombs of the prophets whom your ancestors killed. What now? Yeah, so you're witnesses. You approved the deeds of your ancestors. So your ancestors killed these people, and now you admire them. Something I think about every Martin Luther King Day. Because I would suggest to you, and I don't want to get overly political, but if Martin Luther King were alive today, he would be at the same risk of being shot as he was when he was assassinated. We love Martin Luther King, and we love to hear about I Have a Dream. We do not want to hear about his anti-war talk. We don't want to hear about that. We don't want to read a letter from Birmingham jail. No, we just want to hear the I Have a Dream, where everything looks beautiful and we can aspire to that dream. We're not getting any closer to it, perhaps, but we build statues, we build tombs, we have special days, but we don't actually want to listen to the words. I happen to be a very keen Dr. King. I want to say fan, and that just makes things just worse. I have read a lot of his sermons. I have listened to his words. I have disagreed with him at times. I have agreed with him, but I have also let him affect me. What I hear in these words is the kind of thing where Jesus is saying, yeah, you have all of this, but you don't actually listen to them. You build a tomb for them. Statue, absolutely you do that. But that just keeps them buried. But you didn't listen to them. You didn't listen. Why did your ancestors kill the prophets? Oh, Jeremiah was so great. Was he? Good. Well, what did he say? What did he say to the people at that time that, you know, made them throw him into a cistern? What did he say? What did Elijah say that's so upset? You lionize these prophets, but you don't actually listen to their prophetic voice. Unless that's what I'm getting from that. And I go, yeah, oh, wow. There are so many people that I am just so quick. So, oh, yeah, God, you got to love him, eh? Got to love her. She's amazing. Yeah, but do you actually listen? Or you just sort of admire them from afar? And his point is, woe to you lawyers, because you have all of this knowledge and you're not getting it. Not only that, but you are making it so that others don't get it either. Not knocking Martin Luther King Day, by the way, or Dr. King at all. I'm just saying, you know, we create a celebration for somebody, but we don't actually listen to them. We create a lovely, beautiful tomb and put them in a gorgeous cemetery. But do we actually pay attention to what they offered us while they were alive? Do we let that legacy grow, or do we just make a tomb? He's saying, lawyers, you make these lovely tombs. Scribes, that's what you've been doing. And so the people are satisfied to look at that beautiful bit of statuary on the tomb, and they don't have to listen to the prophet. And that's why, he says, that's why this generation is to blame, right? all the blood of all the prophets will be charged on this generation because you have all of this available to you and you don't pay attention. No. You don't pay attention to what the prophets did. You don't pay attention to what Moses said. No, you're too busy taxing mint. You're so proud that you can go to your little garden and you go, oh, I got, look at that. I've got 20 mint leaves. Okay, that means I better take two out for tithing. Okay, I got those two out there. There you go. I guess I'm right with God now. Meanwhile, people are hungry and starving. People are hurting. They are oppressed. You're not loving them. You're not sharing God's love with them. You're not giving them hope. You're telling them, oh, listen, if you manage to grow 10 of those leaves, make sure you put one of those into the treasury because that's God's law. Nothing to do with their relationship. They get so wrapped up in these rules. And of course, the rules, as I have pointed out several times, occurs to me that Jesus believes that rules mean you never get there because you never keep them all. 613 mitzvahs. Okay, so I might be the best in my class because I got 600, but I'm still 13 short. And here's Jesus saying, come be with me. Listen to me. Live as I do, and you will be one with God. That's what you do, because I am one with God. Those rules, you'll always fall short, but you can't fall short with me because this is a relationship. You lawyers who keep insisting we have to follow all those rules. You're keeping people away. God and the world. Okay, I'm starting to preach and I've gone on way too long. I'm going to stop right there. I'm going to stop right there. So let me offer a prayer and we'll get on with our days, shall we? So let us pray. Loving God, thank you. Thank you for Luke's gospel, for the opportunity to wonder about what Jesus meant to do when he came into the Pharisee's house, what Luke means to tell us, what you are telling us now as we dare to wonder. God, may we hear your word emerge from this wondering, and may we grow in faith because of it. We pray in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, through the Holy Spirit. Amen. Well, that's enough for me today. More than enough, I'm sure. So I just want you to know that you are blessed. God bless you. Please know that God sees you and knows you and loves you as you are. God's love comes to you and embraces you. More than that, it doesn't stay with you. It moves through you and into the world because you change the world. You actually do. Not just by your efforts, but by God's love that flows through you. So please never forget that's what it is to be blessed, and you are so blessed. God bless you. We'll see you tomorrow.